Philippians 4, verses 4 through 9, it says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Finally, brothers, and it could be brothers and sisters in here because it's talking to everyone. "Finally, brothers, whatever is true and noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the God of all peace will be with you." There were two identical twins, and they looked exactly alike, but they were exact opposites when it came to their personalities. One was the eternal optimist and could see good in everything and everybody. And the other one was the eternal pessimist. And one Christmas, the families decided that they were going to see once if they could kind of find an in-between balance between the two brothers. And so they asked them to give their Christmas list. And the most expensive item on the list was a brand new bike. And so they gave this brand new bike to the pessimistic son, thinking that maybe he would get excited and see the good in it. To the other son, they gave a bag of straw, and that was it. They thought they'd maybe get him to be a little bit of a downer. But on Christmas morning, when the boys ran downstairs to discover what they had received from their parents, the pessimistic son opened up the bicycle. And he said, "A bicycle? Why did you give me a bike? It's cold outside, and I can't ride it, and I might fall down and hurt myself." The optimistic son, on the other hand, opened up his bag of straw, and he ran outside and was looking as hard as he could. The folks asked him, "What in the world are you doing?" He said, "You gave me straw. There must be a pony somewhere." I open up with that story because the reality is that we can tend to look through life in two different lenses. And we can look at the same circumstances, and you can see people going through very different or similar circumstances and have a completely different attitude. Some of it has to do with our temperament, but some of it has to do with kind of where we put our stock and where we put our faith. And today we're going to look at what it means to live a thanks-living life, a life full of thanksgiving. And the Apostle Paul calls us to do this in our passage. His first line is, "Rejoice in the Lord always." Again, I'll say rejoice. And the Apostle Paul calls us to live this kind of life of thankfulness no matter what our circumstances is. That's kind of what the word rejoicing means. And let's admit it's not always easy. So we're going to look at, one, what are the signs of a thankful life? And two, how can we achieve it? But before we do, I kind of want to look at the book. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the book of Philippians, but it's a letter. We use in church language, sometimes we might use the term epistle. And what that means is it's written by a guy to a church somewhere. And the guy who wrote the letter is the Apostle Paul. He's one of the leaders of the church. The church that he's sending it to is in Philippi. It's thus the term Philippians. And the town of Philippi was kind of the regional town. It was kind of the head of that area, kind of like Portland or Vancouver metro area is the main city of Southwest Washington and Oregon. And there's something interesting. If you look at Philippians 1:7, it tells us that things aren't necessarily going that great for Paul. You know, Paul isn't telling these people to rejoice or to be thankful when life is on a high for him. In fact, it kind of alludes to the fact that he's in prison. Not exactly something that we would necessarily say is something we would want to be thankful for. The Apostle Paul was actually in prison because he stuck to his guns and didn't compromise when it came to the gospel. And the Philippians are already facing persecution, or they may be kind of facing those trials themselves. And so in this letter, throughout this letter, the Apostle Paul tells them things that he wants to. He started this church. He's kind of the grandfather of the church, and he wants to tell the people in that congregation the things that are important. And what he says is that being thankful in life is very important. It's one of the things that he closes the letter. And he says, no matter what our circumstances, whether things are going well or whether we're facing imprisonment, whether things are doing good at work or whether the things seem terrible, whether we're facing a mounting mortgage or an uncertainty in our job future, or whether our life seems to be going great, to rejoice in the Lord always. I say it again, rejoice. Now, some of us who are sitting here may be really in the throngs of a really dark, deep situation. You may say, I don't know how I can be rejoicing in the midst of a rocky spot in my marriage. Or maybe I'm single and I don't want to be. Or my kids are getting in trouble in school. My job is so uncertain and I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills. But Paul tells us that we can rejoice no matter what our circumstances. And he tells us not only what rejoicing looks for, what thankfulness looks for, but also how we can instill it into our lives, which I think is what we all would like to do, even though we may not be good at it. If you look at verse 4, when you'll see the first thing that he says is the first mark of what it means to be thankful or to live a thankful life. Actually, it's verse 5. It says, "Let your gentleness be evident to all." Now, I don't know about you, but I don't really use the word gentle in too many settings. I may say to the guy on when I give him my package at the airport that, hey, please be gentle if I have something fragile. I've actually been using the word gentle a lot with my one-year-old daughter because she's kind of learning her motor skills, and the reality is when she likes to check out daddy's face, sometimes she can hit, you know, my noggin a little harder than what she thinks, and I say gentle. But this isn't really the gentleness that the Apostle Paul is thinking of. This word could better be translated graciousness, or maybe you could think of it this way, insisting on not insisting on something even though you have the right to do it. You could think of gentleness or graciousness as responding in kindness instead of retaliation, or maybe forgiving someone a debt. Now, when we think of that, we often may think that we're talking financial terms here, like, you know, maybe I'm going to be, if someone owes me $5 for Subway because I bought them the sandwich, I'm not going to be a stickler about it and stick it to them and let them forget it. But the reality is that Paul's talking about more of a relational concept of graciousness and gentleness. In relationships, showing kindness instead of retaliation. If you look at 1 Timothy 3:3, he actually uses the exact same word about leaders in the church. And he says that they need to be temperament, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, not violent, but gentle, and not quarrelsome. So we see that gentleness or graciousness isn't necessarily talking about money, although, I mean, we can forgive people their debt, but it's more of dealing with kindness and retribution. He says that one of the marks of someone whose thankfulness is that they are able to not necessarily treat someone the way that they're treated. Now, if we're honest, it's not always easy to do, is it? I mean, it's easy for us not to be gentle with someone at work. When they make a snide comment to us, we really want to stick it back to them, and we can maybe make a snide comment back. Or if our spouse is doing that annoying thing that annoys us to no end, we may not kind of just look over it, but instead point out that, yes, honey, you're doing that again. When we are dealing with our family members or our kids, the easy thing is when they may snap at us, it's not always so easy for us to respond in gentleness and in kindness, but rather it can escalate into a fight. Whether we like to admit it or not, gentleness is kind of more difficult than we would like to admit. It's not getting caught up in that moment of anger or hardship or responding the way that person did, but to rather show them kindness instead of retaliation. But yet the Apostle Paul says that gentleness and graciousness is a mark of a thankful life. The reality is then when we're thankful for someone, we're probably not near as likely to respond negatively to them. You know, last week I shared at the end of the sermon that my wife and I have been very thankful and gracious for my daughter. We adopted her a little bit over a year ago, and it changes things. When I'm thankful for my daughter and when I'm thankful for just having that relationship, the sleepless nights, the crying, or the attitude just seems like a little bit less of a task because I'm thankful, I'm reminded, and I may be a little bit more patient with her. Thankfulness changes our relationships. So how are you doing in the gentleness category of your life? Are you treating your spouse or your classmates or your coworkers or your family members with graciousness and kindness? Or are you retaliating and letting your relational strife escalate? You know, it's not always an easy thing to do in the heat of the moment. But the Apostle Paul says that if we want to live a thankful life, one of the marks of it is graciousness in our relationships. The second sign of a thankful life that the Apostle Paul says, a rejoicing life, is found in 4:6 as well. It says, don't be anxious about anything. Now, The Apostle Paul says that one of the biggest killers to joy is like anxiety and worry and fear. Now, anxiety is one of those words that we can also mean different things for different people. Anxiety is not like thinking about future events. I should plan for my retirement, and I should anticipate the day when I'm going to retire. Some of you are closer to that than others. And we anticipate that day because we know that the day will come when we no longer work. I may need to anticipate the fact that I have to pay for my I have to do everything I can to help pay my daughter's college tuition. You know, we may get excited and be anticipating something major in our life, like a wedding, to where we get all excited and can't sleep at night. That's anticipation. It's a good thing. Anxiety is a little bit different, though. Anxiety is fretting about the future and worrying about things that are outside of our control. Anxiety is worrying about them and imagining the worst of outcomes in any situation. It's not just planning for the future, but it's thinking that everything bad is going to happen. And it's easy for anxiety to really enter into our lives. We can fret and stew, and we can worry about anything and everything. Anxiety is thinking about your relationship and where it's headed, but expecting it to end badly. Anxiety is doubting that your friends truly like you because you always feel like you have to walk on eggshells and that you can never be yourself because your friendships aren't real. They're just based on you being there for them. Anxiety is planning an event or fretting that no one will show up or that everyone will think that the event was terrible and judge you because of it and think that you're a failure. Anxiety is not only being stressed out about work, but being convinced that you're going to get laid off or something bad is going to happen to you. Anxiety is obsessing about the weather report a week before you need to travel where there's a chance of snow and imagining the worst, and I'm speaking to myself there. I hear snow, and I know I got to drive the winter pass, and I'm notorious for clicking on the internet to check out, has the weather forecast changed for Wednesday? Anxiety can seep into our lives more than what we would like to admit. And the reality is, and I want to make this clear, I was looking into anxiety and into studies, and the reality is that anxiety disorders are on the rise in the United States. And there are literally millions of people who have been diagnosed with that. I mean, we're talking obsessive compulsive disorder. I mean, that's got some anxiety components to it, or there's some mental health stuff. And if you struggle with that, I am in no way saying that there are some biological and chemical factors to that. And I don't want to downplay the role that you're playing in that. That is a real thing, and sometimes it requires counseling and it requires chemicals. It is real. But the reality is that for some of us, anxiety plays a little bit larger role in our lives than we would like to admit. We can fret and stew over things. But the Apostle Paul says that a thankful life and a rejoicing life is free of anxiety. So what are the things that make you anxious? What are the things that you worry about at night that make you that you can't sleep? Or maybe if you're more of a morning person, you get up early and start pondering it rather than being able to sleep. What are the things that cause you emotional strife? Could it be your kids, your job, your work, your relationships? If the lack of graciousness and peace in our life is a mark of what it means to not live a thankful and rejoicing life, how is it that Paul tells us to get over it? You know, normally when we think about stuff, when we tell people, you know, I'm just having a hard time dealing graciously with my spouse. I'm thinking that when we're in the middle of a fight, I get angry and I snap at them. Or when I'm dealing with my kids and I'm in the middle of a fight, they just know how to push my button and I want to stick it to them. Or my coworker's just driving me nuts. Usually we say something like, "Well, just chill out," or "Just stop doing it. Don't let your anger run extreme." Or when we think of what it means to live an anxious life, we just say, don't worry, stop worrying, which makes us worry even more. But the Apostle Paul doesn't tell us that. The Apostle Paul says that it's not a matter of just stopping it, or it's not a matter of trying harder. He says the way to live a more thankful life is, first of all, to remember that the Lord is near. You know, we can get so caught up in our own lives, in our own relationships, in the way that we deal with people, that we can forget that very fact that the Lord is near. And in the heat of the moment, sometimes we forget, we can get this idea of entitlement when we're in that relational strife, where we need to show graciousness, and we can kind of feel like we're entitled to respond to somebody because they treated us badly. But Paul tells us that we need to remember that the Lord is near. And part of that is remembering that, you know what? We came to Christ in a spot of complete brokenness, in a spot of complete anger and sin. We don't always treat Christ the way that he needs to be treated. We ignore him, and we do everything we can in our sinful state to kind of bash him and speak badly of him and just through the way that we live. But Christ humbled himself. He gave up his earthly status, and he didn't give up his rights to come down to earth, to die on a cross, and embraces us in exactly our most ugly and broken state. And when we remember that the Lord is near, that Christ is near, and when we remember our own brokenness and our own kind of sinfulness, we get a little less cocky, and we get a little bit arrogant. When I realize those times when I actually realize how much I actually fail my wife, or I fail my daughter, or I fail my work, or I mess up, and when I feel the weight of that, I'm a little bit more humble when I deal with others. I'm a little bit more patient because I realize that they're just like me. And I'm able to kind of extend that gratitude to them. And I'm extending that patience. I'm a little less arrogant in thinking I have my act all together. And so Paul tells us that one of the things about being more gracious is to remember our own brokenness and our own failures, and to remember that the Lord is near and that Jesus is an important part of our lives. But Paul just doesn't tell us to stop at the Lord is near, because the reality is that we do face dark times. I mean, I don't know what's going on in your life, but I'm sure that there's darkness in it. I'm sure that there are hard things and difficult things. There are things that you may feel overwhelming, that you're fretting about and that you're anxious about, and you feel like there's just nothing you can do. And the Apostle Paul says that not only is Christ near, but that we can talk to God about it. He says, in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Now, I can actually be a pretty anxious person. I mean, my mind can sometimes spin in circles, and I can think about the future. My wife can always tell when anxiety hits me because I can't sleep at night, and I got to just go read a book, or I got to go pray, I got to go read the Bible, I got to do something because I need to calm my mind down. And this verse is really a life verse for me, because when I'm really stressed out about something, and it may be a good thing, the best thing I can do when I'm in a good space, for me, it's to actually go walk, because walking keeps me active. You can tell just in the way I preach, I don't like to stand still. But it keeps me active, and it keeps me centered. And I just walk, and I hike, and I duke it out with God, and I tell him everything that's bothering me, and I tell him all my concerns. And sometimes I'm not very gracious and patient with God. Sometimes I tell him how I think things should be, and I'm annoyed at why they aren't that way. I'd like to sit here and say that I don't, but the reality is I'm not always gracious and patient with God. But in those times when I actually stop to kind of share my stuff, and I take the time to kind of get it out, where I don't let the busyness of my life kind of keep me from engaging in that time, there are the times where I feel at the end, not that all of my problems are going to be magically solved, that I'm going to have everything figured out, but somehow this peace is talked about in the verse 6 can kind of come. And I know that God's going to get me through today, and he's going to get me through tomorrow. And he's going to give me the strength I need and the people I need to help me get through it. You know, I start to remember on those times that there's a God who's in control of my life. And it makes me worry a little bit less. Paul says that if we want to worry less and be more thankful, that one of the keys to it is to not only remember that the Lord is near, but to remember that we can talk to him and that we can give our prayers and petitions to him. And there's something major about when we go through a dark time, knowing that there's somebody there by our side. It's one of the reasons why loving others is such a crucial piece in this church, because God is an invisible God, and he's there with us. But there's something more powerful when we know that we're going through something with someone else. It can get us through. But when we speak to God and we share our requests to him, he can remind us that he's there and that he'll get us through this difficult time. But you know, the other thing about anxiety as I was thinking about it is, at its core, the definition I like to use of sin is that sin is building our identity or our self-worth, our security or our happiness on something other than God. And whether we like to, sin can be actions, but at the heart of it, it's saying that God really doesn't matter as much as we think he is. And we would like to think that we always put God first and Christ first, and that he's always the source of our security and our joy and our happiness. But when I'm anxious, when I'm worried about something with my daughter, if it's 103 temp like it was a couple of weeks ago, whether it's I'm worried about money, or if I'm worried about the church, or I'm worried about who knows what I'm worried about, my relationship, my family, you know, at the heart of it, I put something a little bit more important than God. Paul says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. And whether you have learned or received or heard from them or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. You see, when we're anxious about something, it's often because we put our real security in something else. And it's tricky. It can happen real subtle. We can miss it altogether. But when I'm worried about the weather forecast and my car and if I'm going to be able to drive through there and deal with that, if I'm obsessing about that, I really don't trust that God will get me through even if there's an accident. I think that my health or my car or my daughter's health or my family's health is really more important than God. I don't trust that he'll give me the strength to get through it. I have those doubts. When we worry about finances, which is something that we need to be careful of, we need to treat our money with well, and we need to worry about that. But when we obsess about our bank account or our health or our family, we really put our security in those things rather than God. My health will not destroy my relationship with God. It may make my life more difficult. I may have to go through it, but if God's really my focus, and if he's really what gives me the security and the joy, that's what's going to get me through. And when I'm anxious about something, I'm really actually putting usually that thing a little bit ahead of God. You know, I was anxious about writing the sermon. I had a hard time writing this thing, and I'm trying to figure out, well, why is it? Well, we can be anxious about something. Sometimes I want to be able to make sure I'm preaching it right, get it right. I take the responsibility of preaching seriously. But there's other times where I might be anxious because I want to act smart and I want you to think that I know what I'm talking about. And I'd like to say that my security is only in God, but the reality is sometimes when we're anxious about things, whether we're anxious about a party and how that's going to happen, or if we're anxious about the way a relationship is going to work out, or we can be kind of putting our faith and our security in something like our popularity or our status or our relationships rather than God. And when we live thankful lives, we're thankful for whatever we have, whether it's small or big. And we realize that God is in control and he'll be there by our side. And we don't need to worry and we don't need to be anxious. And that's why kind of what we need to do is sometimes when we're anxious is just step back and ask, why am I obsessing about this? And why am I worried? And is it possible that maybe, just maybe, I put something else on a little bit more priority than God? It's really subtle. But anxiety is one of those things that can kind of show that we've put these things. Tim Keller is a guy I read a lot, and he uses an idea of idols. We can put good things a little bit above God more than we would like to admit. And that's why Paul says that the secret to contentment, the secret to rejoicing in a thankful life, is not to stop worrying, but rather to look at why we're worrying and to look if we're really putting God as central as we'd like to think. It's remembering that God is near. It's remembering that God is there to speak to us and to get us through those difficult times. He's not going to leave us or forsake us. We believe that there's a God in control of this universe, and he can get us through some very difficult times, even if we ask why and fight with him. But it's also remembering that he needs to be the center of our lives and that it's easy for us to kind of get distracted. And that's why Paul tells us at the end to fill our minds with all these good things, to be reminded of the promises that God tells us, that he will be with us, to be reminded that the Lord is coming. And even though our health may fade and we may be sickness, ultimately that may bring us back to Christ. And that's not an easy thing to deal with. But sometimes we forget that what Paul says is that to die is to gain, because we'll be with our Savior. I don't always think that way. And I'm anxious about things. And it's easy for that anxiety to think in. So today, as we leave, I just want you to think about that. To think about, you know, we have reason to be thankful for. We have reason to thank Christ. That Christ, if we're Christians, has worked in our hearts and worked in our minds, and we put our faith in him, and that he will never leave us or forsake us, even when we blow things and completely ignore him, that he is there with us. But the reality is that we can be a little bit like that older brother or those two twins in the story. We can tend to look at all our negative things, or we can sometimes look at we forget to look at our positives. It's the thing he wanted, the bike, but yet it was too cold. And we can do that sometimes with our own lives. And so I want to challenge you to actually just think of, in this week of Thanksgiving, to think of to create a Thanksgiving journal and to write down 3 things a day that you're thankful for. And sometimes the things that we're most anxious for can remind us of what we actually have to be thankful for. I want to end with a poem. It's called Be Thankful, and I don't know who wrote it. The author is unknown, but it says this. Be thankful for the mess to clean up after a party, because it means we've been surrounded by friends. Be thankful for the taxes I have to pay, because it means I'm employed. And in Clark County, that's 13% unemployment. That's a pretty big thing. Be thankful for the clothes that fit a little too snug, because it means I've had enough to eat. Be thankful for the shadow who watches my work, because it means I'm out in the sunshine. Be thankful for a lawn that needs mowing, or windows that need to be cleaning, or a house and gutters that need to be fixed, because I have a home. Be thankful for all the complaining I hear about our government, because it means we have freedom of speech. Be thankful for the space I find at the far end of the parking lot when the mall is crazy, which it will be in this next month, because it means I'm capable of walking. Be thankful for my huge heating bill, because it means I'm warm. Be thankful for me at the person behind me in church who sings off key, because it means I can hear. Be thankful for the piles of laundry and ironing, because it means I have clothes to wear. Be thankful for the weariness and aching of muscles at the end of the day, because it means I have been productive. And be thankful for the alarm that goes off early in the early morning hours, because it means I'm alive. We have more things to be thankful for than what we would like to admit. And sometimes the things that we worry about and complain about the most are things that we really need to be thankful for. And so in this week of Thanksgiving, that's what we want to focus on. I'd add one part line in the poem myself if I could, and that is just be thankful that even though we face struggles, and even though it may seem dark, that we have a God who is near and will never leave us alone in our struggles. Let's pray.